The takeover's out now. John, how are you today?
Oh, great. It's cloudy here in Ireland, but it's nice enough.
Well, it's cloudy here in China too. It must be sharing a weather pattern.
Oh, we must be very warm for October, but no complaints. We need a bit of nice weather here in Ireland.
That's good. John, the takeover, I really loved this, and I'm reading it and thinking, how did he get this into print? What's the story behind the takeover?
If I had to sum it up in one word, I would say it's about the underdog. You know, it's about the downtrodden, and it's about someone who, you know, has no possibility in life, and they're basically, it's Nathan Corby is the main character, and he's raised in the worst kind of conditions you can imagine, you know, and he really is given a very hard time. And then it's about the people at the very top, who are the Doherty family, who run Dublin gangland, and they're basically like a mafia, and they have mass control. They have control with politicians, they control with, they're blackmailing senior rank and policemen, they have control of all facets of crime in the country, usually so. But for some reason, this kid becomes an afterthought that they abuse and that they give a terrible time to. And what happens is they have a lot of very frightened enemies who are in the trenches waiting for a leader. And this kid, because of the life they gave him and because of the life they let him have, he grows up to be their nemesis. And it's basically about him and it's about them and a war that's been going for close to decades, you know. And it's basically it's about power and it's about power shift.
See, when people say Dublin and Ireland to me, the last thing I think of is gangsters. I think of stupid things like Father Ted. So I'm reading this thinking, Ireland sounds like a really dangerous place, and then parts of the back of my brain goes, yes, you remember they had that war there forever?
Yeah. But do you know what it is? To be honest with you, what it is we have the same problems that every other major city and country has. It's the areas where there's youth unemployment, where crime is rampant in the area, where education is lacking, where infrastructure is lacking. And what happens is that, I mean, it's not science, it's not rocket science. Every one of these areas, whether it be London, whether it be Dublin, whether it be, and I'm sure there's, you know, New York, the poorer areas are torn out major criminals. And the question you have to ask is why. Now, we all know that already. So the thing about it is that Dublin has the same problems that everybody else has. But there's one difference with the takeover and, with organised crime, is that the takeover, Dublin at the moment is very much a lot of scattered gangs. There's lots and lots of different gangs. There's not one major power in Dublin, you know. And the takeover is a book where I basically give one family all the power, and I've done it as a very, very highly organised, basically based on the mafia in the 50s and the 60s in America, and because of power and influence that they had. And what I do with this family is, the Doherty family are a family that you read this book, and what I want people to take away from it is they go, this family cannot be beaten, this family cannot be taken on, and this family are just, they frighten me even reading, which is what people have said to me. And I put Nathan in a position of newsreading where he is the underdog, and where, you know, where people can empathise with him, and that's what it's about. I also have in the book, I have a police officer who is after the Dohertys as well, and he's my moral compass in the book. He's the guy who is the good guy who, you know, he's doing everything right, but everything wrong seems to happen to him. So it's these three characters that I have in it, and the lives are intertwined, you know.
So how did you first start off in writing?
I would have written my first book would have been So Frightened of Trance, which followed my second book, and they were both published. But inside, the likes of Lord of the Rings, the likes of Neil Gaiman, I wrote books like that. But inside those books, that heavy, heavy element of crime, which I never even noticed, you know. And maybe it was something in my own subconscious where, you know, I grew up in a working class area, and we grew up spoon-fed stories about criminals and about the big gangsters in the area. And, you know, and you kind of feel kind of like celebrities, you know, that way you would look at them and you would admire them, you know, and a lot of people did. And people who have no options would tend to look at, you know, no options in life and no opportunities in life would tend to look, their influences would be with the major criminals, as opposed to, you know, today as an educated man, you know, I would look at people who, you know, people who work with the found the speakers they're looking for, shows or character people they're looking for, you know, successful writers or successful in any sport or any field, you know, and I would look there for influences. But when you're at war, you know, when you don't broaden your horizons, you tend to be very narrow and you tend to focus on what's in your immediate environment. And in my immediate environment was a lot of criminals, a lot of major criminals, you know. And so my influences were already there because for years and years people spoke about them, in hushed tones, you know, they were kind of Robin Hood figures. So the information was already there, stories were already there, and I had seen, you know, a huge amount of crime in the United States, you know, so it was there. It was there already. All I had to do was put pen to paper.
Mm. I read a bit in your bio that you basically got sent back to school from working unloading pallets by a very kind and caring boss. You must be about the luckiest person I know, because most bosses would go, shut up and unload that pallet.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what I did. When I was in school, I think it was 14, 14 when I had left school. And when I was in school, there was nobody who could say to me that school is a good thing, you know, that school is the way forward, that, you know, there's good opportunities at the same school. I wouldn't have listened to anyone. And I remember, and, you know, I could blame other people and go, well, like, you know, this person thought it was my fault. I didn't want to do it. But working for years in manual labour jobs for minimum pay, well, you know, that changed your attitude. But I was lucky in that I had a boss that said, every time I look at you, your head is in a book. Did you not consider, you know, going back to school? So what I did was I researched it, and I eventually ended up leaving the job and going back to school, and I progressed out to college from that, you know. So I was very lucky that someone actually got it to me, you know. And then once I went back to school, and then once I learned about history, politics, things like economics, maths, just opened up a whole new world here, you know. You see the world for what it is, you see the wider world around you, you know.
Hmm. It really comes through in your writing, because and this is not going to sound horribly patronising or anything, but you've got the feeling in your characters of people who actually have experience. And most writers, when they write about working class backgrounds and they write about people who are working, haven't worked. And that's what made Nathan stand out to me.
Yeah, do you know what? I think it's very easy to create a character that you can empathise with, you know, and I think, you know, first of all, as regards to the research for the book, I had to sit down with a police officer to learn the structures of the police force, and I had to sit down with two criminals who corrected me on. So I had to research, I had to sit down with the two retired criminals, and I had to basically get my research spot on. Otherwise, the book had no credibility, because although everything was fictional in it, the nuts and bolts had to be right, first of all. And again, I think huge help is because of where I'm from. Huge help is, you know, I know how to write about real characters. I know how to write about real events. There's a lot of stuff I've read from various authors, and a lot of it is just stock is panic. It doesn't happen, you know, that way. So a lot of the stuff that I wrote is real things that happened. I mean, throughout the book, about 40 pages taken up with a robbery that has to be planned, a huge robbery that I do in the book that has to be planned to a T and it has to be done properly, and then there's things like money laundering and all. Then there's also huge parts taken up where I have to have a policeman who is being promoted to detective, being promoted to, you know, superintendent. I have to get that all right as well, you know. So the research went into it all right, but again, you know, I think in my own subconscious I have a lot of the material in relation to the crime aspect, because there's a lot of it there, you know. I mean, I'm totally odd now. You know, when you have 40 odd years of stories and different things and different events, and you see different things happening, different people going to prison, you know, people throwing their lives around, people affected by drugs, it's all there, the material is there, you know. Mm-hmm. What I mean? So, and maybe I am writing about real people, but I'm not specifically writing about any one person, you know. I could be writing about a group of people, and that's what I thought. It was so easy to write. I mean, I wrote this book in under a year, and it was an easy book to write. I could sit down and write for 5-6 hours without lifting my head up. It was that easy to write, you know.
Well, it's an easy book to read because the research is there, because it feels real, because it's hung together beautifully. You must be inordinately proud of this book. I would be. I would be out there banging on people's doorsteps and saying, have you read my book? So are you... Are you getting word out there? Are people buying the book? Are people reading the book in your area?
Yeah. I tell you what the huge, what I come across as a huge plus, and I've always tried myself to stay humble, and I've always tried to say, look, I've written a book, I've been published, and I'm in the room, it doesn't mean to get out. I've always been very much like that. I would never go on at it myself and go, you know, I'm good at my craft, or I'm top of my game. I would never say anything like that, ever. But what's ever happening is, and something that's after changing my mindset now. I have got a top Amazon reviewer to review that book. Apparently, has given a 5 stars. This guy has went over books with a steamroller and then shot it down. No problem to him at all. I gave it to him, hoping that he would take it. And, you know, he took it, and he has given the book 5 stars. You know, he's not beholden to me. You know, I didn't pay him for this review. I didn't give him €10,000 for the review. He took the book. He said, I'll read it. If it's bad, I'm going to tell everybody. And he came back and he said, it has everything that you need in a good book. And I went to myself, you know what? He says, I have something here. He says, I know myself I have something here. He said, the problem is now, but it's not really a problem. The barriers that have to be broken down now, you know, that way. There's a lot of the major newspapers. I know for a fact that if a major reviewer in a major newspaper picks this book up, I'm going to get a good review. I know I am, because it has all the elements that everybody likes in a good story. But there's still barriers there at the moment, and there's barriers there for writers, you know, at the moment. And it's breaking down the walls that have been built by the huge publishing houses and by the huge authors now, because there's a coding cartel there where we have the top writers now that are at the very, very top. They're in an ivory tower, they're being handed 25 and 40 million for books, and the publishers are putting a big cushion under their ass, and they're going, Andrew Gray, here's a check for 20 million. When these guys probably haven't grown to get a good book in about 10 years, you know. So, you know, thank God for Amazon, because Amazon has basically said, let the reader decide. So it's given me a platform, and hungry writers like me a platform now to be able to get out there and to kind of break down those barriers, you know. So, it is the way to go, yeah, but we're getting there, you know, and I think those barriers are slowly being broken down because Amazon has leveled the playing field, you know. I'm a big fan of Amazon, as you can probably gather, you know, but, you know, thank God for them, because they've leveled the playing field for the likes of me, and now it's really up to the reader to decide, you know.
Yeah, well, that's the way it should be. I am strongly in favour of little presses like Crime Wave Press that seem to just about solely distribute through Amazon, because... God, they're actually getting real books out there. They're not, as you say, beholden to bloody authors. That kills me.
And you know what? You see the finished product of the book that you have here. Although I wrote this book, if it wasn't for the guys in Crime Wave Press, the book would not be half as good as what it is, because I actually had to cut a lot of material out of it, because what they said was, and at the time, as an artist, another writer, you know, your book is your baby, and you don't like people going near it. It's just an instinct that you have, you know, and every writer will know it. But the guys went to me, Jonathan, there's a lot of stuff here that you don't need. There's a lot of stuff here we're going to cut out. We're going to make this book better. We're going to make the read faster. We're going to make the read, you know, more effective, and we want more of the punch. Those guys, they were ruthless, and they went through and took out all of the dead wood and all of it, trimmed all the fat off it. The book would not even be half as good as what it is if it wasn't for those guys, because I gave it to very discerning readers who will literally be shredded if they don't like my work. I gave it to them before, and I gave it to them after Crime Wave Press got it, and they went, these guys have done a great job on this book, because it just rips me out from page one. You know, so I owe a lot to them. Not a great guys, they really are, you know.
Yeah. So what's next for you, John? Because... takeovers out there, have you got something in work, or have you got something close to being pressed?
I'm always writing. I always have a couple of projects on the go, but my main aim now at the moment, my main aim is to get the takeover out to the wider world. My main aim is to promote this book, because I firmly believe I'm sitting on a gem, and I just need to let the public know that we have a gem here, you know. And that's my main aim at the moment. I do have other books. I have another book half finished. I'm going to continue on with the crime genre, because I think that's where my strength there. I'm a diverse writer, but I recognise it's one way around to anything, you know. But for the foreseeable future, my main aim is to get this book out there. I'm not even going to try to people, this, you know, this is a great book. I don't want to say to people, is, please read it, make it their own mind, and let them make it their own mind. It's the way it should be, you know.
Yep, I think that's the best thing any author can say is, please read my book and judge for yourself, because the moment they start saying, my book is fantastic, people go, but I haven't read it, and you're telling me how good it is.
I see these kinds, and I hope I don't come across as being kind of a cranky person. I'm actually not, I love to see people doing well in all aspects of life. I hate to see people hogging the limelight, but I see massive posters of really bad books, and they're taking out one word out of a review, like amazing, the 7 stars across, you know, a book stop, and it just drives me insane, because I know that that's not the whole review, and I know that they have a marketing campaign of a couple of 100,000 behind them, when there is this phenomenal writers out there who aren't getting any recognition. The problem is that, you know, we have a deadlift celebrity who's probably been booted off the X Factor after 2 shows, who'll get the ghostwriter to write the book, and the huge publishing houses are taking them on. And because they know that people will buy the book, you know. Yeah. And what it's doing is, that's all right, we all have to make money, but what it's doing is, it's watering down craft, you know, the art of writing, and what it's doing is, it's getting really, really good writers, and it's taking the platform out from underneath them.
Yeah.
I think Amazon is giving it back and thank goodness for that, you know.
Yeah, you're very right. Well, look, John, it has been wonderful talking to you today. I hope that the takeover takes over well and truly, and good luck with the rest of the writing.
Thanks very much, and I really appreciate you taking the time to have a chat and all. And please God, if I hit the New York Times, that fella will be talking again.